Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
This podcast was an absolute pleasure. Barry Ord Clark was the 2021 Fly Tire of the Year, and for good reason. Often referred to as the feather bender, Barry has a passion for teaching fly tying and giving back to the fly tying community. He has a huge fly tying channel on YouTube and a wonderful book, The Feather Bender: Fly Tying Techniques. In this episode, we learn about his origins near Manchester, England, what motivated him to move to Norway, and some fantastic tips and tricks that will make you a better fly tire. If you would like to meet Barry and possibly get a signed copy of his book, he will be at the International Fly Tying Symposium in Somerset, New Jersey, coming up on November 11th and 12th of 2023. Speaking of shows, in addition to the symposium, are you going to any of the fly fishing shows this winter? The fly fishing show season goes from January to March at the following locations. We kick off in Marlborough, Massachusetts, which is the Boston show, on January 5th, and that's a three-day show. Then on to Denver, Colorado on January 19th. That's also a three-day show. From there, we come back east to Edison, New Jersey, which is like the tri-state show of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. We also get a lot of people who come down from Connecticut and out from Delaware and Maryland. There's also a good contingency that comes from overseas for this show. From there, we head down to Atlanta on February 5th to 7th, and that's a three-day show. And then we're back in the Pacific Northwest again this year for the Bellevue, Washington show, which is outside of Seattle. That's a two-day show on February 17th and 18th. From there, we head down the coast to the Bay Area show in Pleasanton, California from February 23rd to 25th. I love this show because it's an indoor-outdoor show at the Alameda County Fairgrounds. Then we finish back east at the Lancaster, Pennsylvania show on March 2nd and 3rd. The show season is a blast. Please come out. We'd love to see you. I feel fly fishing is a big, wonderful community of friends, and these shows are like a giant reunion. There's not a better place to find so much fly fishing knowledge and information under one roof. There's so much to do and learn and experience, and you'll find all the details at flyfishingshow.com. I will be live podcasting at all seven shows. If we've met, please come by the booth and say hello. And if I have not had a chance to meet you, please come by the booth and say hi. I always love the chance to get to know our listeners and connect with our ever-growing community. Enjoy this episode with Barry and stay tuned as we have many more episodes coming for you soon. We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com. Barry, thanks for being on our podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, all the way from England via Norway, but we do appreciate you coming all the way this way for the symposium, and I do appreciate you sitting down with us for the podcast. Fly Tire of the Year. So you've been tying for Fly Tire magazine for how long now, Barry?
Guess I've been doing feature articles for about 10, 12 years.
And then this was the first, I guess it's going to be an annual Fly Tire of the Year. We had the publisher of Fly Tire magazine at our banquet last night, and he gave some of the prerequisites for why they chose you as the Fly Tire of the Year. And many of them had to do with not only the quality tying, but the giving back to the community. And you have a huge video channel there in Norway and England. How did that all come about? How did you find out about this?
Well, my background is that I make a living from my articles and books and tying flies. So I do a lot of shows, I've written 12 books on fly tying, and I do a whole load of magazine articles internationally, and of course the YouTube channel, The Featherbender.
Yeah.
So I have a significant profile in the fly tying community internationally. I'm always happy to pass on skills and techniques and anything really that will help others tie flies better.
And that's kind of the common theme that I get, Barry, when I talk to other people, when I see you interact with the community here, is that your generosity and the way you do like to give back to the community. And that was one thing that we heard last night. And actually, they put that out to the readers. And overwhelmingly, your name came up as an ideal candidate for the first annual Fly Tire of the Year. So that must have been quite an honor for you to get that news.
It was very humbling, and I was taken back, to say the least, especially to be voted Fly Tire of the Year in the United States. I mean, there are so many, internationally, there are so many great fly tires, but especially here in the United States, yep, with it being a U.S. magazine as well,
yeah,
that I was voted Fly Tire of the Year was just absolutely superb. I'm very happy with it, extremely happy. I'm very grateful to the readers for voting me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, because that's kind of a, you know, maybe some people might not understand the feather bender. What does that mean to you, and what does it mean?
Well, it's an old English term. If you were bending feathers, you were tying flies. You were winding hackle. So it was just a name. I wanted a catchy name for my profile,
okay,
a social media profile.
I love it.
So,
the feather bender.
Yeah, so I've been bending feathers for near 40 years now.
40 years, yeah. All the way from what part of England?
Originally, I was born in Manchester, so northern England. So I'm a northerner, but I lived in London for 15 years before I moved to Norway.
What is your career background?
Well, more or less always been self-employed. And when I lived in London, I was an advertising photographer.
No kidding.
But mostly working with pop groups, Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney, Duran Duran.
You photographed all those guys?
All those guys. I had a career of it. And when I moved to Norway, the only pop group in Norway was Ha Ha at the time.
I'm retiring. Yeah. I'm getting into something else.
But there was a lot of hunting and fishing magazines in Norway, in Scandinavia in general, and the photography was very poor. So I thought, maybe there is a niche product here. And I'd got kind of fed up traveling back to England every now and then to work. So I managed to make a niche for myself in hunting and fishing, and then it went over to fly fishing, and then it went over to fly tying.
And you kind of landed there for a while.
And that's it. That's what I've been doing now for 20 years.
Well, I have to get, there's so much there, and I want to get into a ton of that. And I want to learn about your passions. I want to learn about tying, and we're going to talk about so many cool things here. But if you think I'm going to let this moment pass, that you are a photographer for all these incredible English artists, like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
I need to get a couple stories out of this now. I mean, if you're a photographer,
there's I can assure you there's no stories. And working with flies is much more pleasant than working with rock stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pain in the ass from morning to night.
They just, very demanding, huh?
Yeah, very. The only ones that weren't demanding were the superstars. Mick Jagger.
Easy going.
Was so professional, would turn up on time, get the job done. How do you want me? Do it like this, done, finished, and away. But then you would get other bands that were young and inexperienced, and you would arrange for them to come to the studio at 12 o'clock, and they would turn up at 5 o'clock, and they would want champagne before they started.
M&M's?
And so, you know, I'd got fed up with that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any connections that you still have from that world advertising?
Sure.
Or who would be any names that we know that you're allowed to talk about? You're giving me that look like it's very,
sure, no,
very
no,
private.
No. It's a private thing, but I still do have connections with it, yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's good.
What are some of those passions you had talked about? You're from Manchester, England, right? Mm. You love football or?
No, not. I mean, I follow Manchester.
Manchester.
If there's a game on TV, but it's nothing I follow passionately or with any zest that is, there's a match on, I don't have to see it. But if I'm there and I'm not doing anything,
you enjoy it.
I enjoy watching it.
How about golf?
Not at all. I played golf once.
Okay.
I swung the club or whatever it's called behind me. I hit my mate in the jaw and broke his jaw.
Oh, no.
He was stood too close to me. I've never picked one up since.
Oh, smart move. Wise move. Okay, so basically we love the hunt.
Yes.
We love to fly fish. Yep. And we love fly tying.
Yep.
Okay, so now as far as fly tying, one of the questions that we had thought about is, what is the most enjoyable aspect of fly tying for you?
Teaching others. Absolutely. Okay. Without a doubt. Making sure that they don't fail, that they succeed, and they're happy with their results. And if you're functional and precise and practiced, there is no reason why your pupil should fail.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no reason. And I get great pleasure from teaching, especially youngsters, to succeed in fly tying.
And so your teaching obviously comes through on a more global macro level from your YouTube channel.
Sure.
The Featherbender.
Yeah, and fly tying articles and yeah, and shows especially. And it's really great being at this show. And this is the first US show I've ever done, I've tied at. And it's been a fantastic experience. Everybody has been so helpful and kind. A lot of youngsters been here. It was great to judge the competition yesterday.
Yep.
And have two youngsters under, I think one was 8 and the other one was 12, win places 1 and 2 in the competition. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely great. Great natural talents, and they should be nurtured, and they will succeed.
And besides, obviously, your YouTube channel, your articles and your books, do you do any personal, I mean, obviously, at the shows, you tie very personally and teach personally, but do you have any classes that people take?
I have classes and courses. I do online courses, club courses. I tie in shops.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's all that is, it helps build up that profile and helps get me around to meet new tires.
You had mentioned, how many shows do you do approximately a year?
I normally do about 20 international shows.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, you're a young boy in Northern England, Manchester area.
Yeah.
And passion for fishing through the early years of your life, or?
Sure. I was insanely passionate as a young lad. I think until I was about 14. And then, but that was not fly fishing, that was course fishing.
Before we jump back into the podcast, here's a short word from one of our fantastic sponsors. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com.
Can I read you something here? And it's actually something that came across my understanding in the last few days as I got to know you a little bit here. Barry says, and this is a book that you had dedicated, this newest book, The Featherbender's Fly Tying Techniques, A Comprehensive Guide to Classic and Modern Trout Flies. And the opening here in the dedication says, this book is dedicated to my father, Edward Ord Clark, who died a hard life shortly before my 16th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Like any great father, he taught me to fish. When I was about 11 years old, I recall a trip to Bakewell in Derbyshire. We stood side by side in the bank of the River Wye, spellbound, watching fishermen casting in a way I had never seen before. I asked my father what the man was doing. He's fly fishing. We'll have to try that one day, he replied. We ran out of time.
Sure.
Dad, this book is yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful dedication.
For sure. And he was a great influence on not only my fishing, but my hunting and my art school education as well. And being a coal miner, a soldier in, a 19-year-old soldier at Dunkirk. At Dunkirk, where he was blown up by a bomb, had both his legs broken, and was missing the action for, I believe, around 5 months. But he'd been picked up by a small fishing vessel from Hastings in England and taken to a hospital there.
Wow.
And then he was a coal miner and a cotton mill worker.
He's a hard worker.
Oh.
Coal miner, cotton mill worker.
Yeah.
Survived two broken legs in Dunkirk.
Yeah. And died of emphysema.
From the coal mines?
And cotton, yeah.
And the cotton, too?
Yeah, and smoking, of course. Yeah. He was only 56 when he died.
And you're 16?
I was 16, yeah.
There was so much to the end of that that I had to bring it up when you talk about we ran out of time.
Mm.
That last little bit there says a mouthful, a worldful,
sure,
for so many people.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just with maybe losing a parent, but just maybe friendships or relationships or...
Yeah, seize the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I recently became a grandfather as well.
Congratulations.
Which is the greatest thing ever. And since then, I've learned that life is very short. And you should take every day and live it the best you can, for sure. And that's what I will hopefully try and do for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I think it comes through in the beginning in your introduction there when you say, we ran out of time. And that's just like my son, he's 19. And this is the first time we ever left him home. My wife is out of town this weekend, and I'm out of town in a different spot. My son goes back and forth to school. He's 19. He has the key to the house, and he's there by the house. We have Ring. He had a couple friends stay over. Yeah. They ordered pizza.
Yeah.
But you know why? He likes to come home on the weekend. He likes to go spend some time with his grandfather.
Sure.
They went to a train show yesterday together, and that's what I like, is that appreciation that grandfathers and grandsons and granddaughters, they spend that quality time together.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what you were trying to get to.
Sure.
When you say, we ran out of time, make sure you don't run out of time.
Well, I mean, he loved making lures and all kinds of stuff. So, he would have been, and where I live now, and the hunting I have available, and the fishing I have available.
He would have been right there with you, huh?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about the hunting. I know that's a big thing for you.
Yeah, it's become less recently in the recent years because of other commitments, but I've hunted very consistently in the last 30 years. For 14 of the last 30 years, for 6-8 weeks every year.
What are some of the target species?
It's Norwegian hunting mostly. I have hunted abroad, but it's mostly Norwegian. It's moose and roe deer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all for food?
Food is part of it.
Yeah.
Is the result. And, of course, tying materials.
And so there you are, you're 16, and then your dad taught you how to, you know, be a fisherman, and he mentioned that maybe you want to get into fly tying. You had looked at that, and that was something that you were thinking about maybe in the future.
Not at all.
No, I'm sorry, fly fishing.
Yeah, that was mentioned, but it didn't happen. What did happen was I, totally by chance, I stumbled across a guy at a flea market in London one weekend, and I can't, unfortunately, for the life of me, remember his name. He was called Gary. He was a Scot, and he had some fully dressed salmon flies in frames for sale at this flea market.
Okay.
And having come from an art education background, I just loved how these flies were made, the look of them.
Yeah.
And this was my absolute first introduction into fly tying. And we got talking, and I mentioned to him that I was a photographer, and he said, look, I'd like to make a brochure of my flies for sale. Could you do the photography? And if so, what would it cost? So I said, well, if you're willing to teach me how to tie these, I'll do it for free. We can do a swap.
I love that.
So he said, absolutely. And then we found out that he lived just a few blocks from me.
Oh, wow.
And he came round every Thursday night, brought two vices, all the classic materials, and he taught me to tie fully dressed salmon flies.
No kid, a fully dressed salmon fly.
Taught me to tie fully dressed salmon flies. And we tied about 50 different patterns.
And a fully dressed salmon fly was your introduction to fly tying?
That was my introduction.
Man, you might as well go right to the top.
Yeah, so that was my introduction. And then I didn't start fishing for quite some time after that. Then I started tying trout flies. So I thought, well, I've got to get into fly fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those advanced techniques of the salmon patterns must have been an incredible foundation.
And they call them advanced techniques, but they're not advanced techniques unless you make them advanced techniques.
Okay.
They just have to be learned.
Okay.
Yeah. And the same as any elementary trout technique.
Okay.
You just have to learn them.
Was there a friendship that came out of this relationship between tying and photography?
Later on, we were fishing together at different places. So it all worked well. We lost contact when I moved to Norway.
Okay.
And that was it, unfortunately.
That was an incredible moment in time. And I think we all have those. The gentleman who taught me how to tie and fish from a Trout Unlimited 101 class, you know what I mean? That was an incredible moment in time for me. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, sure.
So your introduction came from this man who decided to do a barter with you.
Yeah, but it can go another way as well. Mark Petitjean tells a story that he calls the man that said no. Yeah. And Mark had never tied a fly before, and he was at a club meeting in Switzerland, and there was a famous Swiss tyer there whose name avails me at the moment, but he was sat tying flies, and Mark was fascinated by it. And Mark said, "Could you please show me how to do this?" And he turned around to Mark and said, "No." And that was his answer. So that Mark thought, well, sod him, I will learn to tie them on my own.
Well, so much for you. I'll figure this out with or without you.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes you need that little instigation.
So it can go both ways. But normally, I mean, that kind of, if you're not willing to share that knowledge, then you shouldn't be tying at clubs.
Exactly, yeah. Tell me about Mark Petitjean. He wrote the foreword in your book here.
Yep.
So tell me about, for our listeners who might not know Mark, tell me about your relationship with Mark and who he is as a person.
Well, Mark is originally French, lives in Switzerland, so he's Swiss now, lived there most of his life. He is known for his knowledge and passion with tying with cul de canard, which is the gland feather from a duck.
A duck's...
waterfowl.
Backside.
Well, waterfowl, really.
Oh, waterfowl, okay, yeah.
All birds have CDC.
Okay.
But it's the ones from waterfowl that are useful for fly tyers.
I have some guinea fowl at my property, at my house in Boxford there.
Well, all birds have CDC.
So if I need a little CDC at, like, last minute, I can go grab some in the hen house?
I don't know how good guinea fowl CDC would be. But if a bird doesn't have a preening gland, then it will drain when it rains.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to Google that then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So Mark is now known, he's tied flies for 30 years now, plus he's known for his absolutely magnificent tool and vice designs, all his fly patterns just using CDC. Mark and I have been friends for many, many years.
He can float a fly.
He can float a fly. And I think now, nearly 10 years ago, we started work on his definitive book on CDC, which is called Petitjean CDC.
I saw that, yeah. It's a beautiful book.
So it was 7 years in making of the photography, just the photography, which I did all the photography.
Is that right?
So there's I think there's nearly 5,000 photographs in the book. But it's the CDC Bible. It's the definitive work. It will never be beaten.
It's the one.
It's
if
the
you're going to go get a book on CDC, yeah. Mark Petitjean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, a good friend of mine, Tim Camisa, is fascinated by your photography in your book here, Fly Tying Techniques.
Yeah.
And he really wants to know, and if you're willing to give up the secret, on how you create this gradient in your photography in the background.
It's very easy when you know how, like fly tying.
I'm seeing a theme here, Barry.
It's a neutral gray background that I put lights on to gradate it with filters. That's it. But I use full studio lighting, full studio setup, being an advertising photographer.
Yeah.
So, and that's why my pictures are the best.
I love that.
There are no others that can be them.
You're just making it out there. You're putting it out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a strong statement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's true. And there is
I love that.
Look at any step-by-step pictures. There is nothing that comes near them.
I'm getting a little side eye over there, but I love it.
Nothing
I love
that comes
it.
Near
I'm
them.
Not backing down from the fact that I love that.
Yeah.
And these are gorgeous here. This is like a hair's air?
That's it, yeah.
Hair's air-ish?
Yeah, and I've done all the...
The background set up there.
Yeah, all still lives, advertising still lives, really, for all the images, all the flies.
So
just to make them, you know, make it a more of a coffee table book, more interesting.
So there you are in England, and you're going through your adolescent years, your young adult years. You came across this gentleman. You bartered to learn how to tie flies. You learned how to tie Atlantic salmon flies. You helped him with some photography. What was next for you? You're in a career as a photographer with all these celebrities, Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin. And I don't know if it was Led Zeppelin.
No, not Led Zeppelin.
I was kind of hoping it was Led Zeppelin.
I have a very good friend who also lived in London at the time, Martin, but he's also from Northern England and was also a course fisherman. So we were good mates and we were both punks at the same time in the 70s.
I love it.
So we love punk music and we love seeing bands and everything. We got to a stage where we both were tying flies at the moment and Martin was finding it difficult tying flies and kind of failed in it.
Okay.
Like crashed and burned.
He didn't become Fly Tyer of the Year?
Oh, no. He crashed and burned with fly tie. So I ended up tying all these flies.
Okay.
But what we did was we looked at fly rods and tackle and we thought it was a bit expensive.
Yeah.
So we bought one together.
You shared it. We went in on it.
We bought a share rod, an Axia rod.
That's so English. Yeah. If you're going to share a beat, you might as well share a rod.
Yeah. So we bought a rod, a reel, line, and a landing net together.
That's unbelievable.
And I think it lasted for about 35 minutes of me sitting on the bank waiting for him to learn to cast.
So he couldn't cast either?
None of us could cast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was waving this stick in the air and the line was going everywhere and I was looking at my watch every 2 minutes. I want to go.
It's my turn.
Yeah, it's my turn. And I ended up selling in my heart and buying my own rod the same day.
Yeah,
That was just a lost cause.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, but we're still mates. I visited him. I stayed with him last week in London.
Nice.
And we still go fishing together. We've done Iceland together and Sweden. And we've done a few destinations together.
And we'll get back to Iceland in a sec. Yeah. But I want to know how you got to Norway, because I think I know.
Okay.
But I want to hear your story behind how you got to Norway.
Okay. It's not very exciting. It was a tragedy, really. My daughter was born. She was 5 years old in London. We were living in just on the outskirts of Notting Hill. And she was coming home from nursery on a Friday afternoon. We had an apartment there. We had another child on the way, my son. And I was renting a photo studio close by. So we thought I'd quit with the studio. We'd sell the apartment, buy somewhere bigger where I could have a studio at home and room for the new child as well. But my daughter came home from nursery Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock, we came in the door, I closed the door behind me, and I heard a shot. So I sent my daughter in, I opened the front door, and a 17-year-old boy was dead on our doorstep with a hole in his forehead.
Oh my goodness.
So that made the decision for us. We moved to North. My wife moved with my daughter 3 days later. I rented a movable van. I filled it with all our furniture, filled it up, and I moved 5 days later.
Wow.
And we've never been back since. We rented the apartment out.
Did you know this young man?
No, not at all.
It was just some stranger and just a difficult neighborhood.
We were told later that it was a drug-related killing.
Oh, my goodness. That's just a tragedy.
So it was a tragedy, but it made our decision of our move very easy.
Did the area start getting more dangerous?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, this
was
just
a safe area.
This was, relatively safe. But it was just a random thing that happened. I mean, it doesn't happen. I think it's worse now in London. But it was enough for us to frighten us to get out of Dodge.
And your wife's Norwegian?
Yes.
Yeah.
My wife's Norwegian.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'd talked about moving to Norway before.
Yeah.
But that kind of nailed it for us.
How did you and your wife meet?
We met in London. She was working at the Norwegian Chamber of Commerce in Trafalgar Square, and I was in London working as a photographer. And we met in a pub in Holland Park, and that was it.
Having a pint?
Having a pint.
A pint or a half pint, or what did they say?
Having a pint.
I guess you weren't minding your pints and half pints.
No. And I think we've been together now.
P's and Q's, right? Isn't that mind your P's and Q's, mind your pints and quarts? You weren't minding your pints and quarts. Didn't you?
That's it. We said hello, and we've been together ever since. I think it's 40 years now.
Congratulations. That's incredible.
Yeah.
tell me about your life in Norway together now. You have your grandkids?
Yeah, we've got two children, Tor Edward and Christiana. Christiana's an architect, works in Oslo. And Tor Edward is a energy dealer in the old stock exchange in Amsterdam.
Do they enjoy Norway? Or do they happy
with it? Of course they do. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beautiful country, huh? A little cold at times, but...
Yeah, we have a long winter. That's the only disadvantage.
Yeah, but beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The fjords?
Yes.
Have you been up to see them?
I've seen them. Yeah.
They're beautiful, huh?
Yeah. I'm very lucky where we live. We're 15 minutes from the coast and 15 minutes from the mountains.
Very nice.
Yeah. So we're not moving back. I'm trying to get my wife to retire to Italy, but... We'll
now
see.
That's what I'm talking
but
about we'll as see. A paisan myself. Yeah, so what part we'll of see. Italy would you like
oh,
to?
Oh, no, anywhere. But I love Tuscany and Abruzzo. And,
wine? Are you a wine?
Yes, absolutely.
Cheese? Wine and cheese?
Yeah, wine and food. Yeah.
What would be two or three tips that you could leave our fly tying listeners with as the fly tire of the year? What are some, maybe, I don't know if it's thread or a certain hackle or some things that
could
we
give you three tips.
Three tips.
Yeah. Practice, practice, and practice.
Over there, Jerry's like, yep, Jerry Caviello is definitely up in that, right? Practice, huh?
Yep, that's what it is. And take your time. Learn the techniques. And when you've learned all the elementary techniques and mastered them, you can do anything.
Do you have a specific vice that you like to talk about more than another?
I use the Petit Jean vice, the Swiss Master. I have 30, somewhere in the region of 30 vices. And top of the...
And the tools, too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Petit Jean tools?
Yeah, not all Petit Jean, but I use his bobbin and, yeah.
Yep. Do you like one thread more than another?
Absolutely. I have two threads I use.
Okay.
Shear for everything that is a regular fly, SHWER. It's 14-0, so it's a fine thread, but very strong. Available in, I believe, 10 or 12 generic colors, so you don't need anything more. And the other thread is Dyneema,
yep,
which I use for all my deer hair fly tying. You can't,
you can't break it.
You have to have Dyneema to tie deer hair.
You have to work to break it.
Yes, you can't break it, really.
Yep.
It's difficult.
Great.
Yeah.
As far as like hackle or certain birds, do you like, is there a certain company like?
No, I mean.
Whatever you can find.
I work as a consultant for Veniard in the UK,
okay,
who are the biggest suppliers in Europe of fly tying materials. And, of course, Veniard have been going now very shortly. They're 125 years old. They've been doing this for 125 years,
yep,
dealing with feathers.
I'm going to leave you with this last thought. Now, first, before I do that, Barry, Ord Clark.
Yes.
Is that a middle name or is this your last name?
Ord is either a middle name, it's not the last name, but it's an extension of the last name that is...
Part of your family.
Scottish. It's on the Scottish borders, it's from Northumberland, and my father was Edward Ord Clark. As you can see, I'm wearing my family tartan.
I love that.
Yeah. So I was fishing with Hardy in Scotland many, many years ago, and I saw the tartan shop, and they had this ancient book that is the size of a kind of Harry Potter magic book, and you give them your name and they look it up and then they tell you which clan you can use.
Wow. Of the tartan?
Yes.
That's amazing.
If you want to use your family. So
the family.
All family names are connected to different clans.
Yep.
So this was this I'm wearing now is Hunting Stewart.
That's the family name.
Stewart is the family name.
Yeah. What about Clark?
Ord Clark is from... It was connected to the Stuart clan.
Okay, so you're part of that clan.
Yeah. So this is what they would wear if they were hunting.
Have you been up there fishing at all?
Yes, of course.
How is the fishing in Scotland?
Well, it's like anywhere else at the moment. There's a lack of water and pollution's a problem, a great problem. But the chalk streams in the UK are being devastated by pollution after the water companies were privatised by the Conservative government.
Can I get your viewpoint on Norwegian salmon, the pens and the raising?
Do not eat it. Stop buying it. It's deadly. It's poisonous.
But I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, it's poisonous.
And it's no good for the salmon population either.
It is absolutely not good for the salmon population, and it is not good for people to eat. you will die 100% sure that this will bite Norway in the arse in years to come. This will, people will be suing them because
of, this is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
There is a lawsuit waiting to happen with the poisons that are in these fish.
And I'm sure you can carry that with any raised fish.
Can't speak for any raised fish, but what they're feeding them and the antibiotics they're pumping into them and the lifestyle these poor fish live is not good.
Well, I want to leave with this concept because I know, and I want to give a lot of credit to Chuck Forimsky, who's doing an amazing job at least trying to continue to promote the international fly tying and bringing the whole world together for an event.
Absolutely. If it wasn't for Chuck pulling his finger out and sorting my trip out for me, it would never have happened. So I'm eternally grateful for Chuck, what he managed to organize for to get me here.
Well, Barry, it has been absolutely my pleasure, and I thank you for your generous allowing us to record this interview with you here at the symposium. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the show, and thank you for everything you do for the fly tying community.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.